Hour number two, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday, live at Le Madeleine in Mount Juliet. Their grand opening today, which has been very good. A lot of people have come through and are continuing to come through. So excited about that. But excited to talk to Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and the head coach at Innsworth High School. Tim, how you doing?
Doing great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. Look, one thing that, you know, typically will happen when you have a top five pick in the draft, especially as you get closer to the draft, is everybody starts talking about trade partners and trading back, and that seems to be the case with the Titans. We've talked to you a lot about Jeremiah Love and taking him at four, but could you see a positive case for Cam Ward in particular to trade back and add more draft assets?
Yeah, I think you always can, especially when, you know, if there's a desire for a team to move up. Let's say the Commanders are looking to move up because they want Jeremiah Love. And so they think, you know, getting all the way up to where the Titans are, you know, helps with that, gets in front of a team like the Giants, who maybe are also interested in a player like Love. So, yeah, I mean, you can see it happening. I tend to kind of fall in the line of, like, all of these draft picks, even in the first round, they're such unknown commodities, and the draft capital to move up seems so significant. So if you're on, you know, the sell side of it, then, yeah, probably could make sense. You know, being on the buy side of it, you know, I don't always love for, an unproven player. But it seems like that's something general managers are willing to do, you know, each and every year once we get to this time.
So with that said, Mike Borgonzi has said that, you know, when they get to the wherever they're going to pick, they're going to take the best player available. Does a general manager using that phrase kind of get them in trouble sometimes, because it might lock them in a box if, you know, analysts or whoever don't perceive the player they take as the best player available and it's more for need?
Yeah, I think guys say that about best player available, because I do think there's an element where you do have to trust your scouting. Like, you do have to have a board where you say, like, we invest a lot of time and effort into and money, resources into the player evaluation. And so if we get to the point and, you know, player A has got this really high rating, but it's not a position of need, do we take him, and all of that. Like, I do think you have to trust your scouting, so I think there's an element of that. But I also don't know that you can ever truly believe somebody when they say, look, we're taking the best player available. If the quarterback were the best player available, they're not taking a quarterback, right? So it just – I believe that it's kind of one of those scenarios where you say it, but everybody knows that it still has to be a scheme and personnel and need fit at every pick, to be honest.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck on the Chasing Big Joe Show. Tim, I want to talk about the passing of Coach McGinnis. You know, when your father passed away, I'm sure you heard from people that your father had this positive impact upon their lives, where they played football or not, but he had that impact on him. Coach Mack seemed to have that same impact as a coach of leading men, and you read all the accolades, and everybody's just, I mean, this man, the world to me. What is it about men like your father and Coach McGinnis that are larger than life, that have this profound impact on young men as they played, as a coach and teammates and everything?
Yeah, you know, I didn't get to know him. I've ran across him a few times at like a Titans practice during training camp or things like that. And, you know, he was always, you know, I think, you know, very extremely friendly. And, you know, and so I, you know, my impression typically with, you know, coaches like that, you know, care about the people that they've coached, right? Develop personal relationships with the people that they've coached and make the guys feel like they care about them as, you know, as people and young men more so than they just care about them as players. You know, I think when guys have the ability to do that as a coach in a game where you're spending so much time and, you know, there's such physical and mental demand on everybody, I think it can have a profound impact. And, you know, just from reading some of the things that, that people have said online, you know, of what he meant to them, you know, he certainly had an impact like that. And, you know, that's more important than wins and losses, and is something that certainly is going to last longer than, you know, just, you know, a playing career or a coaching career. But, you know, we'll leave a legacy much longer than that.
I know this is, might be a question that you can't answer, but in your mind, and you know football better than anybody I know, what makes a great coach, Tim?
You know, I think you have to know football, but I think you also have to be able to teach it, and then be able to relate to people, and be able to, you know, establish trust. And so I just think that, you know, you hear people talk about it being a relationship business, and I think it really is. Like, there's always a point about, you know, football acumen and all of that. But I think more than anything, I think players who feel like coaches, you know, believe in them and want to invest in them as young men, I think that makes a good coach. And so, you know, I think anybody that has played football can look back at a coach that they had and just think about the impact that they had on their life beyond football, just in terms of how they believed in them, communicated with them, and how they helped them grow. And I think, you know, that's one of the beauties about the game of football, and is coming across people like that.
Tim, now that you're a head coach and you're doing well at Innsworth, do you have a different perspective now of the guys who coach you at Boston College and the guys that coach in the NFL because you are now yourself a coach and you're leading young men?
I definitely think coaching gives you a perspective that you don't always appreciate as a player. I mean, one of the things that, you know, always bothered me as a player was when if something wasn't going my way, you know, if I was, you know, whether playing time, where I was in the depth chart, just how the, you know, the competition for a position was going for me. It was always frustrating to me if I were in a situation where I didn't know why I stood where I stood. And, you know, sometimes if you ask a coach, they would just give you a good, oh, no, you're doing great, you're doing amazing. And it's like, well, not really, because when I look at the reps or I look at the depth chart, like, that's actually not how it's shaking out. So, like, as a player, and I'm not talking about, like, just even youth football, high school football. This happened to me at the Giants, where it is like I was at a certain place on the depth chart, and I really didn't understand why, and I couldn't get a legitimate answer why. And so that would be just, like, one specific example of I don't allow that to happen in my role as the head football coach at Innsworth. Like, if a kid isn't playing and wants to know why, he will get a clear and honest answer about why he stands where he stands. And, you know, it doesn't mean that everyone's always going to love what they hear, but that's an important life lesson, you know, for guys. Like, you're not always going to get told everything is great, everything is great. Like, at some point, look, I was fired 8 times before I was 30. At some point, you're going to get some information that it's not exactly what you want to hear, but it's maybe the truth. And so, look, listen, guy, you know, the experience will be the experience. No one ever going to say, like, hey, you know, coach lied to me about this or that. Like, that's just because of my experience as a player, that's just not something that I would put a player through now as a coach.
Well, does playing the quarterback position, you know, like you did, does that help you be a head coach? Because, one, from a field standpoint, you have to see everything, even on defense. You have to know what the defense is doing. But at the same time, you know the pressures that come with that position if you don't perform. So did that kind of help you in your preparation to be a head coach?
You know, I think so. I think there's other aspects of playing quarterback too, where, you know, you have to use this as an example. There's a player on the team that's unhappy with the number of catches or targets that he's getting. Well, like, as a quarterback, sometimes you have to be able to deal with that, address that, speak to it, talk about it, you know, sympathize with a player because of that. And, look, those things happen as a head coach as well. Those are things you have to deal with, you know, as a coach, just like you did as a player. So I think all of that, I do think that there are valuable lessons as a quarterback. And then certainly, as I think back to my time, like mine, you know, the information I learned from Kevin Gilbride about the run game in my time at the Giants was invaluable. I mean, I felt like I was sitting in an offensive line room at times because of, you know, the way that he would teach the run game to the quarterbacks. That's really important, you know, and that's, you know, I was teammates with, or I was, you know, coworkers with John Ritchie, the former NFL fullback at ESPN. And he's like, man, I just feel like my time as a player, all I did was stare at the butts of offensive linemen where, like, you were actually learning stuff. And so I, you know, I'm thankful for that. And I think most guys that played the position would feel a similar way.
Yeah, you know, you hit a chord with me about clarity. I remember one time in college, I thought I had a good game on a Saturday. I came out on a Monday, and I went from first team to third team. And I asked the coach, I said, I don't understand this. He's like, you got 5 minutes? I'm like, yeah. Puts a tape on. There's three plays that I was terrible on. He's like, you got to do better. You got 4 days to show me you can do better. And I needed that.
Amazing.
I needed to know why I was moved down to third team, because had I not known that, I would have been mad at the coach, mad at my teammates. I needed the clarity. So you hit
a chord with me talking about
how you don't do that.
Yeah, and Joe, I want not to cut you off, but like, and had he said, no, man, you're doing great. Just keep it up. No, man, you're like, just keep it up. Like, you're doing great. Like, we had you in there. Like, you'll get your shot again. Just keep it
right.
up. Had that been his answer, which a lot of coaches do, because they don't want to have, you know, a conversation where they maybe are delivering some, you know, real things that are maybe hard for a player to hear, you know, that wouldn't have helped you. You know, it wouldn't have helped you become a better player. It wouldn't have helped you understand your situation. And quite frankly, you know, there was going to be another point in your life where you were going to hear something unrelated to football that you were going to have to say, like, no, I got to be better. And that would have been the first time. And who knows how it affected you.
Amen, brother.
He is ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck and the head coach at Innsworth. We'll have more with him coming up next, including what's next for Reuben Bain. That's all ahead here on Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe on this Tuesday, continuing our conversation with ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck. And, Tim, the report came out over the weekend that Reuben Bain was involved in a fatal car accident a couple of years ago. Charges were dropped, but a young lady died after the accident. People we've talked to kind of feel like NFL teams knew about it, but how does this affect his draft stock, if at all, now that this report has come out just a week before the draft?
Yeah, I think it's going to vary team by team. You know, we've seen things similar to this every year, and I think that, you know, that's typically what happens. There's some teams that, you know, to your point, Chase, some teams knew about it and some teams didn't, you know, with things in the past. And then, you know, I think the perspective for each club will, you know, I think in some ways be influenced by things that have happened in the past, right? Like, I think the Isaiah Wilson experience in Tennessee will, you know, will have an effect for years, even if it's, you know, different groups, you know, of leadership that are, you know, involved in it. So, and then I think when there are teams that have, you know, taken risks on guys and it works out, you know, I think that probably makes them a little more apt to take some risks. So, you know, that would be my guess with it. I would think that this is probably not a surprise, which is why I think the information is coming out when it's coming out.
Yeah, and that makes sense. Would it, if you're one of the people making this decision, would it deter you at all, especially if he were to have told you, or like, you know, I know from working with Floyd Reese, he would tell us that, you know, in those interviews, basically it was is there anything I need to know that's going to make either one of us look stupid? And yeah. So if he didn't divulge that, that'd be a problem. But if he did, then, you know, I feel like that's showing some honesty.
Yeah, so that's a great example of it. So, like, not to make judgment on the issue because I haven't read the entire, you know, I haven't read the scenario of, you know, the details involved in that. But to your point and to, you know, kind of, you know, how Floyd would have, you know, talked about this, if he was asked and wasn't forthcoming about it, yeah, then they would affect how I, you know, how I proceeded forward with it. Because at that point, it's somebody's lying to you. Somebody's lying to you. It's hard to trust them, you know, if you give them an opportunity to tell the truth and they're lying.
Talking Tim Hausbeck on the Chase and Big Joe Show. Tim, looking at Ty Simpson, I don't recall a quarterback in a long time who's projected to go anywhere from second to the fourth round. It fluctuates every single day. And I don't get it. I think he's a good quarterback. I just don't know why all the up and down with him. And you know the position. You play the position. You know how this goes. Why do you think this is happening?
I think it's happening because he doesn't have a ton. There's not a huge sample size. Doesn't have a ton of starts. And so if you just look at the history of guys that, whatever the number is, fewer than 20 starts or things like that, especially in recent memory, those guys haven't really fared well, right? So if you just look at Anthony Richardson, Trey Lance, you know, guys that didn't have a ton of starts, you know, haven't had success. So I think there's going to be people that gives a lot of pause, and there's reason for it. It's the hardest position in sports, and so to think that somebody who hasn't played it a lot, especially at a high level against high level competition in college, there's going to be concern. And then on top of it, like it is for all players, for Ty Simpson, there are good plays and bad plays when you watch him. And so, you know, because the sample size isn't real big, it's easy to get to a conclusion of, hey, I feel this way about him or that way about him based on this small sample size. When a guy has 40 something starts, you can say, look, you know, the overwhelming experience watching him play is this. You know, there's more bad than good, or it's clear that he's able to do this because I've seen it over three seasons, right? And so I think that's why there's such a, you know, probably a wide range of people being like, no, he's the best quarterback in the draft, which would mean he would get picked number one overall, and look, he could end up going outside of round one.
It's just crazy. Are you sold on Mendoza at number one to the Raiders? Would that be a good fit? I mean, is he the guy for them?
I do think that he's the best prospect. When you look at size, experience, production, what he did to a program that, you know, traditionally had not been a very good football program, what he did against high-level competition, what he did in critical moments, you know, how he tests, you know, in terms of like just physically measures all of those things. And then you would, on top of it, I think you look at his path and you think about the production at more than one place. He is checking a lot of boxes in terms of giving you confidence that he would be able to do it when he goes to a pro team and is faced with some of the adversity that the guys are faced when they get drafted in the NFL in the first round.
Good points. Let me ask you this. When your brother got drafted in 98, was it up and down with him as well? I know he got drafted by the Packers on down, but it was like, hey, you're going to go here, you're going to go there. You might go second round, you might go fourth round. I mean, I got to think watching your brother go through this was like, what in the world?
Yeah, you know, for him, he was not projected to get drafted. So when the Packers called him and took him, it went from like, we're not really sure what to expect to, oh my gosh, this is an amazing party that we're about to have right now. Like, can you believe it? Like, this is absolutely incredible. And, you know, just learning some of the stories now of like the why, it's really been, you know, it's kind of been wild. You know, his story was he had one coach show up to his pro day. It happened to be Andy Reid. So he was working at the Packers at the time. He was I want to say it was a tight ends coach the year prior. Wasn't even a quarterback coach. And, you know, Andy, I think since had told Matthew, like, I really didn't care what it was going to look like. I wasn't worried about, like, could he throw? Was he smart? He was more like, did I want this guy in my meeting room? You know, did I like, what would it be like when he's sitting in there with, I forget who the quarterbacks were at the time. It would have been like Favre, Doug Peterson, and David Klingler. Like, dude, could he fit in this, you know, quarterback meeting room with those guys? And, you know, that was really why he made the trip to Chestnut Hill from Green Bay.
He is ESPN NFL analyst Tim Hasselbeck, who always joins us on Tuesdays at 1 o'clock. Tim, appreciate the time as always. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. See you, fellas.
Absolutely. Tim Hasselbeck joins us every week, and we'll react to some of the things he had to say on the draft. Coming up next, live from La Madeline here in Mount Juliet. You can come by and see us. A lot of people still in here. I just had the turkey sandwich. It's fantastic. It really hits the spot. So come by and say hello. We'll
That's
have more
good,
coming
buddy.
Here on 102.5 The Game.